Get ready for the Girls on Games podcast, your weekly dose of news, reviews, and everything video games. Always served with a good helping of hype and just a pinch of salt. And now, your host, Leah.
Welcome to another Girls on Games podcast. My name is Leah. I'm the host of the show. This is episode number 444. 444. This week we're going to be talking about Embracer Group splitting out into three entities, which is interesting. We're also going to talk about the Fallout TV show, because Kat's been watching it, and I think we have a funny article on here that Kat brought to the table, so I'm excited about that. But before I get into that, let me introduce you to the friendly voice joining me around this digital table. Catherine, how you doing?
I'm good. Yourself?
Good. We're playing a lot of like podcast musical chairs over the past month, eh?
Yeah, because tonight Joelle is out.
Yeah, she's doing something like Earth Day related with work. So happy Earth Day, everybody, though you hear this obviously later. But I guess Earth Week. We're doing it at work as kind of like an Earth Week thing. Let's get through some housekeeping. If you enjoy this show, you can subscribe. We're available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Podbean. If you'd like to get some GOG merch, you can do that by going to designbyhumans.com/shop/girlsongames. If you'd like to give us a tip, maybe buy us a coffee, you can do that by going to our Ko-fi. That's ko-fi.com/girlsongames. Kat, how was your vacation? Though I'm sure you like spilled all the beans last week, but I haven't had time to listen to the episode, so it's on me.
Yeah, the TLDR was amazing. We did a lot of visiting all of North Holland, mostly Amsterdam, did a lot of touristy stuff, like the boat ride on the canals and visiting the city that way. Ate my weight in cheese. Still doing that because, pro tip, if you go to somewhere that has a laundromat, spending the €4 to do laundry halfway through so you have more room in your luggage to bring back cheese, do that.
Oh, yes. Pro tip.
Yeah, because going, because you're only allowed 23 kilograms, going our bag was 18 kilograms. Coming back, it was about 21 and a half. Oh, and I was like, I could have brought back more cheese, and I didn't because I was afraid we were going to be too heavy. Mm-hmm. But yeah, compared to like my mother-in-law and sister-in-law who got to the airport and their luggage was too heavy and they had to do the thing where you take it out somehow and then shove it into your carry-on.
Okay.
Until you balance out.
I've done that dance before.
Since Pascal and I decided to only bring like enough clothing for half of our trip and just kind of like do a load of laundry halfway through.
Yeah.
So basically that was it. Saw a lot of sites. All the photos are on Instagram. Last week I went to work and I brought some Stroop waffles and some basic ass chocolate I bought in a pharmacy over there. It was so much better than any chocolate we have here.
Of course.
And I gave a lot of sweets to my coworkers. I still have a lot of chocolate, actually, so I should walk around the floor tomorrow and be like, eat this. I brought it from Amsterdam. Please eat it. So it was a wonderful trip. It is very fucking windy over there. That's why they have all the windmills. And then we came back, and here it was windy and rainy, and we were like, cool. So we brought back the Netherlands weather with us into Canada.
I was impressed that you made it to the Miro head offices.
That was apparent. That was like completely random, by the way.
I didn't know
they were in Amsterdam, and I didn't know they were on. Like, we were just walking from the Rijksmuseum to some shop that my in-laws wanted to hit for some shopping, like that they love over there. I was like, cool. And as we were walking, I saw this and I just stopped it in my track and took a photo and took a selfie. And they were like, what the fuck? I was like, this is
nerdy.
Yeah, this is
nerdy.
This is
work shit.
This is designer shit. Yeah. And I paid to have an eSIM so I could have data over there, you know, mm-hmm. to use the internet and stuff. It's much cheaper than, like, you know, roaming with, like, Rogers or Bell or whatever you use.
Okay.
So if your phone has an eSIM capacity, you can download an app and then you pay. And it's like, I think it was $9 US for 3 gigabytes. And I ended up using 2.5, I think. But yeah, I used some of that data that I paid specifically so I could Google stuff as we walk around Amsterdam to send that to log into Teams mm-hmm. and send that selfie to my work chat.
Good call.
To the UI work chat. Good just call. Like, I got 2 UI work chat. I was like the For Honor one and then one where it's just like with some of my friends that are on their projects. I was like, guess what? And then I locked out. I was like, this is a 200 megabytes well spent. yeah, that was completely random. I know, like, also Guerrilla Games, the people that make Horizon,
yeah,
are there somewhere downtown-ish, but I didn't check the address and I didn't walk past because I would have also taken a photo being like, hey, game devs. But we mostly stuck to the old part, the touristy parts. So maybe I think they're a bit more out there. Or we just didn't walk past there. But TLDR, beautiful city, beautiful architecture. Messes with my brain how everything is close in Europe.
Oh, yeah.
Because, like, at one point my mother-in-law was like, oh, I was thinking maybe we could do if a day trip to Brussels. And I was like, a day trip to Belgium. And turns out, like, being in Amsterdam and going into Brussels in Belgium is like being in Montreal and decided to drive to Ottawa. And I was like, this is fucking not fair.
Yeah. We're in a very, very widespread country.
And not very densely populated. No. And every time I go to anywhere else, honestly, like, even parts of Latin America, it's just like, you show up and you're like, all of those people here?
Yeah.
All the fucking time?
Yeah.
It's just like...
Well, we were mentioning it in the Discord chat, like, my parents have a hunting and fishing lodge in the central Newfoundland, and it'd be nothing for us to, like, drive out there and back over the course of a long weekend. It's a 6-hour drive.
Yeah.
And 30 minutes is on a dirt road. Like, yeah. That 30 minutes, give or take, depending on who's driving and what car you're going in, right?
Anything under 300 kilometers is a round trip.
Yeah, exactly. I can do it in a day. I was, like, actually talking to Mike about, like, going to Buffalo, because I was mm-hmm. like, I wouldn't mind, like, going for, like, an afternoon to Buffalo. It can be done. I think it's about, like, the distance of going to, like, Whitby or something. It, like, it's even shorter than going to Peterborough. So I was like, huh, maybe we should do that one day.
Yeah, you just have to. Yeah. I think your only wild card is passing the border, right? That can take a while.
Yeah, how long that takes. Yeah, exactly.
How long that takes and whatnot. But honestly, like, if you do it, like, one random afternoon and avoid, like, rush hour and you have your passports and whatnot.
I got them. I got them because I just used them.
Yeah. How was your trip to Mexico?
Glorious, warm, relaxing. I love that place. We went back to the exact same resort, so I knew exactly what to expect. I knew, like, some of the people were the same people working there. Like, the guy running the bellhop, who was awesome. There's the way that the pool's set up, because we have one of those swim outs, is there's a lady going around serving you, you know, asking if you want a drink or whatever, right? And she'll go get it and bring it back and give her tip and that, because it was an all-inclusive. Same lady as last time. Food was great. We did a little bit more walking around the other side of the resort. We went over to where the sports complex was, where you can do, like, paddle boarding and where they have, like, the rifle shooting and the archery and things like that. Mm-hmm. But that's always, like, 11 o'clock. Mike and I were never fit to go out at 11 o'clock. Usually that was the time we were, like, getting ready to, like, hit the pool. If we weren't, like, just coming back from breakfast or, like, ordering breakfast, we were, like, getting mm-hmm. in the pool. So yeah, but it was nice. I totally chilled and wasn't really on my phone too much. Didn't even really play any games too much. Most games I played was on my way home and once I got home. Because we ended up coming back on Wednesday. And because last time I got COVID on the way back, I was like, well, I'll just take Thursday and Friday off. And then I got Saturday, Sunday anyway, just to kind of, like, have a full, like, 10 days. And yeah, that was a good idea. And also taking off, we left on Friday, taking off the Thursday to get prepared was a good idea too, because we were not like in a rush. Because I don't know about you and Pascal, but like Mike and I, either if I'm working from home or coming home from work, is such a hassle by the time we actually settle in the evenings to do anything. It's like 9, 10 o'clock at night. Yeah. There's just so much to do. By the time you get home, you eat, the dog, get the dog situated, do all this. Like, the day's gone.
Yeah. Yeah. See, we left on Friday. It was Good Friday, so I had it off anyway.
Yeah.
And our flight was at 5. We needed to be... our flight was at... We needed to be there... No, it was at night. It was like at...
You did the red eye.
At 8. We needed to be at the airport around 5 to be there for like the 3 hours.
That's what we did too, but we had to be there in the morning for 8.
So, so Thursday I went into work because it's a mandatory day. But like that, sometimes we have stuff like the Sangaset or stuff like that on Thursday. It's one of the reasons I go in, because it's like the project and social day. But I was like, at 4:30, I actually dipped. I was like, gotta get ready for shit. So I did some of the planning and packing the night of. I think we did takeout for supper, because at this point the fridge was empty. And then we had like all of Friday until 4 to get everything else situated. So it was...
That's essentially the same thing.
Yeah, and because I figured, like, you know, it takes half an hour, between half an hour and 45 minutes to get to the airport by taxi.
Yeah.
So I booked us a taxi for 4 to give us some leeway. That motherfucker got us to the airport in 25 minutes flat.
That's impressive, especially considering that is almost rush hour, if not rush hour.
Exactly, but he didn't use the 40. I'm sorry, this is going to be Montreal inside baseball, but he basically took Cremazy and the 520.
Oh, so okay. He
avoided a lot of like the just the because it was Good Friday. I figured a lot of all the auto routes around Montreal would be filled with people going away for the long weekend. Like, I wasn't worried about the airport. I was worried about traffic around the airport because of the Good Friday long weekend. I didn't think like there would be a lot of people for international departures. I just thought like, because that area also has like a Via Rail station, I just thought there would be a lot of travelers. Turns out this dude knew exactly where to avoid. And pro tip, taxis in Montreal can use the same lanes as the buses.
Oh, they probably did that to give them some kind of boost with all the Uber and Lyft and whatever else, rideshare.
Exactly. So I reserved my taxi in advance to go. And when we came back, like, we did the thing where you just go out where there's the taxi stand, and like there's like the big wait line that they kind of like snake around.
Yeah.
And then there's a dude just like waving down taxis and waving down people to go sit in the taxi. That's what we did. I think it took us like under 20 minutes from like getting into that line and sitting into a taxi. Cause I was like there's the 747 bus that you can take that brings you to a metro station that like is included with my monthly pass. But I was like, so many people. And then like, after we did that, there was like we drove past a pickup zone where people can call a taxi or call an Uber.
Yeah.
And I saw people from my flight just standing there. And I was like, that's not like, that's not the way to go at the Montreal airport. Just get in the line. Just let the Yule employees flag you down. Just got to wait like outside 20 minutes. It's not the dead of winter. You're not even like open sky. If it's raining, you're like, it's fine. Just let that do. It was much more efficient to do that.
Yeah. We Ubered both ways, but we got back late because our flight was delayed 4 hours.
Yeah,
but
I heard
flight
that.
Over was so cool. We were on that Boeing 787 Dreamliner.
Okay. That's not the one that's popping open, is it?
No. The body is one solid tube of metal.
Okay.
Yeah. So anyways, I think WestJet bought them back in like 2019 or something like that, or started using them in 2019. It is a really nice airplane. Like, slick, new, lots of space. We had TV screens in front of us. I was playing Bejeweled. Mike was playing Angry Birds on the flight on we the did, screens.
We did that. our flight with KLM was an Airbus. The equivalent of the Airbus equivalent of a 747. Mm-hmm. But they also had the screen, which are basically little Android tablets.
Yeah.
And yeah, I played Angry Birds and Bejeweled as well.
Yeah, that was fun. And then I watched a show called The Traitors, which I think started as a British show, but now they're doing, like, there's a Canadian one, there's an American one, or whatever thing. It's almost like Clue. It's
okay.
Like a whodunit show where all these random people get brought, like, in the one's a Canadian, the American one, there's a lot of celebrities involved, but they get brought to this castle, and there's this one person who I guess is, like, I guess you can call them, like, the dungeon master, but they're essentially, like, running the show. And you're either selected to be a traitor,
okay,
or if you're not selected, you are a faithful. And the traitors can kill, I say that in air quotes, off the faithfuls. And the faithfuls have to try and figure out who the traitors are, and they will banish someone from the house. And when they're banished, they say whether or not they were a traitor or a faithful. And so, like, it's, but there's also, like, games that they have to play and stuff while they're doing it. So they're, like, bonding and getting to know each other and all this kind of stuff. But at the same time, there's this overarching game and someone's going to win money at the end of it. It was really fascinating. They had 3 episodes. And I'm like, I need to watch more of this, especially if there's, like, celebrities in it. Because I bet you then, because these people that for the British show, none of them knew each other, right? But, like, if there's a version with celebrities, then, like, they have their, people know who they are. It's kind of, like, harder to fake it, right?
Okay.
And especially if they're known for being, like, shady and, like, other games and stuff, like other reality shows and things
okay.
like that. So yeah, obviously all the good content originates from freaking England.
Yeah, no, a lot of good TV show from England.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of, like, the Americans classic are American adaptations.
I know,
like The Office,
exactly. Yeah.
Or Shameless is also another one that was adapted from a British show.
Yeah.
I mean, no, they make good shows in America. Just remember that.
Yeah.
If you're not watching the English shows, you're really missing out.
Yeah, that's where all the good comes from. Okay, let's get into some of the Fantasy Critic stuff.
Yeah, last week
games
we glanced
came out today.
Yeah, last week we glanced over it, but because neither Joelle and I have the back end, we were just like,
you couldn't see the history.
Yeah,
no, but anyway, you can see the history in both cases. Yeah.
I guess
because I'm not logged in right now and I can see it. So,
Def a skill issue then.
Yesterday, or today, sorry, the Tales of Kinzera Zao game is, the review started popping off. It releases tomorrow, though. And that's on, are you Tony Stank? No, you're Game Last. Tony Stank is Joelle.
Yeah.
So Joelle right now, the critic score is sitting at 77, but obviously it's not locked in yet. So we got to wait and see about that. I don't think anything else has come out outside of that right now. Ooh, I didn't realize Dragon's Dogma 2 got me 17 points. Woohoo! Okay, then, so not too much there. Let's see, did anybody pick up anything last week, I wonder? Nope, we haven't done anything since April 6th.
Yeah, I think somebody dropped a game?
Yeah, it was Joelle, she dropped a game. Okay, and then on the Community League, Darth is now in number one, Pat is in second, Offshore Meteor is in third, I'm in fourth, Phoenix is in fifth, Ross is in sixth, Jess Kostar is in seventh, Elbank, and ANSP Kingsby are tied in 8th, 0, and Zhang Pao is in 10th. So I had Zhao in this one. Right. And then what else? Is there anything else that's coming out? Oh, Eoiden Chronicle 100 Heroes is supposed to come out tomorrow too. That's a Sirius Cybernetics Corporation. And then also another Crab's Treasure is supposed to come out this week as well. And that's Apple Orchard Games. So Offshore Meteor is the one who's sitting on the Euden. I don't even know if I'm pronouncing that right. E-I-Y-U-D-E-N. Euden? How would you pronounce that?
E-I-Y-U-D-E-N. Euden?
Maybe. So that's currently at a critic of 76. So that's sitting there waiting. I'm sitting with Tales of Kinzera Zao at 77. And then I don't think the other game has any reviews out yet. Yeah, there's nothing listed yet. Let's see if anybody did anything while we were gone or while I was gone. It feels like such a long time that I was gone, but it really wasn't. But it just goes to show how much you need to have that, like,
yeah,
that break.
Yeah, like I came back. Like, this is my second week at work since coming mm-hmm. back. And honestly, it feels like the Netherlands was last year already.
I know. The Sirius Cybernetics Corporation on April 13th picked up the game Nine Souls with a bid of $7. Sirius Cybernetics Corporation also picked up on April 13th the game The Crush House with a bid of $1, Bob! $1.
$1, Bob.
So wait and see. I mean, I'm just anxiously waiting all the different announcements and stuff that are coming out. I think there's an ID at Xbox event that's supposed to happen tied into IGN or something next week. There was a Nindie Direct thing while I was away as well, like a Nintendo Indies thingy-ma-bobber. I don't think they use Nindie anymore. But yeah, soon. Everything's happening because we're almost done. Can you believe next week is May? Next week is May. The month that comes after May is June. You know what's in June? Summer Games Fest. All the chaos, all the things. All the things are happening. That's when I spend all my monies from my Fantasy Critic League.
Yeah, I'm going to have to be on the ball because I don't have a lot of points right now. Yeah. At the same time, I don't have a lot of games.
Mines are empty and a lot of stuff. So
yeah. I also don't have a lot of games that came out in the that were coming out in the first half.
True, yeah.
So I'm gonna need some bangers in there. I'm gonna need a good 90 or something. I'm telling you, if Dragon Age doesn't come out, I'm out of there. It's gonna take me out of the competition.
Kat, thanks to our friends over at PlayStation, you got the opportunity to play Horizon Forbidden West on PC.
Yes.
I think I dropped that to you before I left.
It was no, it was before I left.
Before you left, and then you jumped in once you got back. How's it been going? I did see your picture of you connecting it to your TV.
Yeah, on Sunday, I was, because I played, I'm not very far in, like, I'm not even into the Forbidden West.
Oh.
I'm still doing, like, I finished the tutorial part, which is like, hey, let's remind you how to play this fucking game, or if you've never played a Forbidden game, this is how you play this game.
Yeah.
And then I'm in the first area, like, around, Chain Scrape and all that jazz. And honestly, I'm going to be talking about this game forever because how I play these games is I scrap, like I'll grab a piece of bread and scrape every bit of sauce out of the content before I move out to an area, like lick my plate clean. So, of course, I'm still in the first open world area and not even into the Forbidden West yet. Because they got me towers to climb, machines to scan, quests and side quests. But if I can give, and we've covered this game at length because Joel played on PS5 when it came out. It is gorgeous on PC. I don't know what the base requirements are, but like, you know, I got a laptop. My laptop is like a year and a half old. Runs it like a dream. And yeah, I did the setup like on Sunday. I was like, this is great, but I can't be like, I didn't want to put on headphones and sit at my desk. I was like, no, I want to be on the couch. So I just kind of like, I was like, what kind of HDMI cable we have? What's plugged into what? So I unplug whatever was plugged into the PS4 that we haven't turned on in literally 2 years. Like, I finished Ghost of Tsushima, turned it off. It was never turned off. I turned on ever again. did that plugged into my computer. And I have this little cushion that you put on your lap that you can put like an iPad on. I use mm-hmm. it like for when I used to doodle with my iPad. Mm-hmm. I use that to like prop my laptop up so that it's not flat on the surface, so that there's like air circulation.
Yeah.
I was using it when I was playing Baldur's Gate 3 before I hurt myself and I had to play Baldur's Gate 3 on my stomach. I would play it like sometimes on the couch. I would use that. But I hadn't done the thing to connect it to the TV yet. I would just play with my laptop like in the living room. Mm-hmm. But now it's like I gotta plug it to the TV. Like I don't, mostly because I want the sound system. Yeah. And I haven't figured out how to play in 4K from my laptop to the TV. Not sure if my laptop has the capabilities, but even like at the base 1080p on the TV, the game gorgeous. Like the details, like the character art, the character models. Every goddamn NPC you speak with is so finely crafted. And I'm sorry, but like Aloy's rosacea?
I know. Isn't it wild?
I'm like, that's a redheaded woman that's been running around and being in the sun.
Yeah.
And everybody she meets, like any kind of NPC you talk with, like they're fully voiced, they're fully animated. Definitely like the cinematics and the talking, like honestly, like compared to like, let's say compare it to Baldur's Gate 3 because it's the last one I played. Like, even more natural. Like, Baldur's Gate 3 was amazing. This is even better, in my opinion. At the same time, Horizon doesn't have to deal with a bunch of weird fantasy races, like tieflings with their horns and orcs with their tusks. So, you know, like, by having just humans, you can say they put a lot of care. But so far, like, I am impressed. Like, this is, I'm gonna love this game and I'm gonna eat every crumb it gives me, just like I did for the original one, for Horizon Zero Dawn, which also I had played later. I had played on the PlayStation 4 and I had bought like on sale, which included the Frozen Wild DLC.
Mm-hmm.
And this one came with the Burning Shore DLC as well, and it's just playing on Steam, through Steam. And honestly, so far, no weird crashes, no problem, no anything. It just looks like a gorgeous game. And the only thing is I've noticed, I have some issues with the control scheme. But I think it's just a matter of, I don't think it's a difference between like the PlayStation controller and the Xbox controller. I just think it's like I'm using a lot of reflexes from playing a lot of Assassin's Creed.
Yeah, that'll do it.
Because they put some of the stuff on X, which I expect to be on B. Because like, and I want to press
the rightmost button, right?
Yeah, because I want to press and hold B to drop. But B will make you like jump to a next grappling point. And I'm just like, what the fuck?
Yeah. That's just like muscle memory stuff that you rethink. Because like, I'm playing on Nintendo and every time they're like, hit A, and I hit the bottom button, they're like, no, that's B. And I'm like,
yeah, that's cancel.
Every like, time.
That's except for every other controller. So because I ended up doing some stuff where it's just like I jump off the ledge or I missed my next point that I could jump to. Like, that was like, honestly, like when I fell, I was like, that was some Assassin's Creed 2 bullshit when they hadn't fine-tuned the parkour and the jumping and all of that. When sometimes I would just literally scream at Ezio. I was like, not there. Like, Aloy did the same. And after that, like, I was like, it's not, it should be better. Like, this is a very modern. And then I figured that it was just like my muscle memory from Assassin's Creed. From like playing Mirage like a month ago, I was like, oh yeah, that's a me problem, that's a skill issue, like the kids like to say online.
Your fingers need to relearn where they gotta go.
But I'm very happy we have a code. I will put it to good use. If not, I would have bought it. I would have eventually bought the game.
I know you would have. And when it came up, since I had already played and Joelle had already played, it was like, it's Kat's turn.
Yes. Definitely. Yes, Sony, keep putting your games on PC, please. I'm not buying it. At this point, I'm not buying a PlayStation 5. Just, I'll buy your games on PC. Like, I bought this beast to play Baldur's Gate 3. Might as well use it to play other games.
Yeah. Yep, yep. David Diver has me hook, line, and sinker. Yeah. No pun intended.
Was that your... It's not your first time playing it, right?
Yes, it is. Yeah, because it didn't... It came out last year, and it was, like, on my wishes and things to play, and there's... My backlog is
Simon's
nuts.
The one who played this game.
Yes.
And talked about it then.
And, my backlog from last year is nuts, where I'm kind of happy right now that I'm... It's... There's nothing that really... I really want to jump into. I don't know. I'm having a little bit of a conflict of... I don't want to say morals. Maybe it's because I turned 40 and I just said, like, obviously I want to play the big games that I'm excited about playing, but I don't want to play games just to play games because I need to play games. I want to play games I want to play.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I've really come to a you know,
I've dropped
self-knowledge
dropped more games and more shows in the past year than I have in my entire life.
Oh yeah, totally. But this game is not one that I've dropped. And you know what? It's like every time I turn it on to play, and I don't have a short play sessions either, I'm learning more and more and more, and they're throwing more at me, but never is it getting overcomplicated. Never is it like obnoxious, and it's funny and it's cute and endearing. And I was saying to Joelle before I left on vacation, I was like, she needs to play this. I think you need to play this.
Really?
This is like a farming sim mashed up with, and it does have farm sim mechanics, but like the thought, like the farming, the crafting, and the management mashed up with like a Zelda roguelike light. Like, it's wacky. It's really wacky, but it works so well.
Okay.
I was explaining it to Mike, and you know, obviously, you know the types of games he likes to play is like racers and sports and whatever else, and I'm like, dude, this is wackadoodle. And I can't wait to play Dredge next. I think that's gonna be the next one on my list. I'm gonna stick with the underwater. I started the year on Coral Island, which I'm waiting for the update on. And yeah, I think I'll end up going to Dredge next. And because
there's like
a crossover.
There's a crossover. Yeah, because right now, while we were in the Netherlands, Pazcat brought the Switch and was playing Dredge, actually.
Yeah.
He said he really liked it, and he was like, I think you might like it. I was like, Leo will definitely like it. I'm like, yes, you need to
Pascal, we will talk.
You two have very similar taste in games when it comes to non sports or like the smaller like the non souls like, I guess, because Pascal's play like three kinds of games, which is like Souls games, sports games, or small
management simmy farming.
Yeah.
Weird. And he and I always gravitate to the really weird ones too, like Graveyard Keeper. And if he likes Dredge, I'm like, everybody said I would like Dredge, and I'm like, okay, I need to play this game. And just any game with a fishing mechanic, right?
Yeah, just shoving in more into your backlog. But if you want a sure value, because like we talk, like we've been dropping stuff we don't really enjoy left, right, and center, I think Dredge is your next like sure value pick.
Yeah. I mean, I've got 30 hours in a day that I were already. But when we were in Mexico, we were stuck in the airport for four and a half hours. And they have a F1 sim there. So Mike was their best customer that afternoon. And he went and tried the F1 sim three times.
Nice.
And it's one of those, it's not F1 EA F1. It's like their own version or whatever, but they do have like the tracks and things like that. But it's one of those machines that you sit in and the whole thing moves.
Yeah, I figured it was like a...
Yeah, and it had like the full three screens around him.
The cockpit and everything.
Yeah, exactly, where it was moving. So he did really well. The first one and third one was the same race. I don't remember which race it was off the top of my head. But the second one he did was Montreal.
Nice.
So... when he finished the race, he was doing well. There was like a crowd around him. And when he finished the race, it didn't come up with the standings. And we got chummy with the guys that were working there. And he was like, how'd he do? So anyways, we walk over to the screen afterwards and he pulled it up. And he goes, holy shit, dude. Mike got the second fastest on that track.
Wow.
For all the people who played it. He did, obviously, he came in first for like the session or whatever, because it's just against AI and whatever. But like, yeah, second fastest lap on that track.
You can tell he plays a lot of racing games.
He plays a lot of racing. So yeah, he was like, yeah. But he, one thing he wished they had in it was a seatbelt. Because the thing, when you like brake, it does throw you forward, right?
Oh, really?
And he wasn't used to that the first time.
Got a bit of whiplash there, bud.
Yeah. But he liked it. He, it kind of, it made the 4.5 hour stay not so bad. And let alone when we got on the airplane, it was a swoop airplane. They had no screens, no nothing. And the people who give the food and drink to the airline were on strike. So we had water and pretzels on the airplane for a 3.5 hour flight.
Wow.
We got in at 2 o'clock. And then I saw the price of gas had jumped up to 180. And I was like, why? I'm going back to Mexico.
Fuck this.
Did you guys do a walk down memory card lane last week?
No. Oh, God, no. I was... Listen, okay. I barely made it through the entire episode without jet lag fucking me up. I was don't expect a nice little game. Like, we just kind of glanced over it. We messed up the Fantasy Critic update now that I realize the league history is under public actions. Literally, like, I was not fully there.
Yeah, Kat was still, mine was still in Amsterdam, which is fine.
Yeah.
So let's go on a walk down memory card lane. Each week, the team, namely Catherine today, will have to guess the historical game that would have released during the time of this episode's airing. We'll start with the release date, then I'll give hints about the game, and Kat can attempt to guess what it is. Talk it out, Kat, as always. This game released on April 30th, 2014.
2014. Oh, that's previous gen. Mm. Fallout 4?
No.
Okay. I'll take the next hint.
It came out on, and let me read a laundry list now, PS3, PS4, Xbox 360, Xbox One, Windows, and Wii U. A laundry list.
That is a laundry. That's
on release day, I believe. Yeah.
Wii U. Okay, that's a Ubisoft type of laundry list. I think only like Ubisoft and EA would be like, but everywhere.
You can get it everywhere, unless it's freaking what's the game? Skyrim, where it comes out on. Toaster and fridge too.
Oh yeah, I saw a joke article that the Fallout series would be on every streaming channel at one point, just because of like Bethesda and how they put everything on everything.
Yeah. Dude, the game is back up in the freaking top of streaming and top of Steam downloads. That's nuts. Fallout 4, that is, not 76.
I mean, 76 got a bit of a surge, but yeah. Definitely, probably more like if you want something closer to the show, play Fallout 4. So we said like okay, so it was PlayStation 3 and PlayStation 4, yes, Xbox ma'am. 360 and Xbox One and Wii U.
Yes, ma'am. And Wii U and Windows.
And Wii U and Windows, PC. Man. What came out on Wii U? Assassin's Creed 3?
No.
Hmm.
I think maybe there was a goal in the hockey game. The guys are watching the Leaf game.
You heard them yell.
I just heard a noise.
A whoop. Okay, I'll take the next hint.
It is a platforming role-playing game.
Okay, we're talking more like platforming. We're talking like something in the vein of Prince of Persia, or is it Rayman Legends?
No. Do you have another hint?
Yes, please.
Inspired from classic fairy tales.
Child of Light?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah! I knew it was a Ubisoft title for some reason.
So yeah, Child of Light released on April 30th, 2014. It released on PS3, PS4, Xbox 360, Xbox One, Windows, and Wii U. Came out on other, a bunch of
other
platforms.
Wait, it's coming on the...
But like, I wasn't going to name all that.
10-year anniversary?
Yeah, wow. Inspired from classic fairy tales, features turn-based combat with unique real-time elements such as interrupting enemy attacks with well-timed actions. It has Metroidvania elements. The dialogue is presented in rhyming verse, giving a poetic and ethereal quality to the writing. The musical score was written by Cardi Pirat. It's renowned for its stunning hand-painted art style resembling watercolors, and it was developed by Ubisoft Montreal. If you have not played Child of Light, you should play that game. Get on it. It's great.
Yeah. I think it's got ported to Switch and everything, too.
I think it's been on that's why I said, like, yeah. There was, like, a laundry list of, like, places it was, and I was like, this is where it came on launch. And I remember reviewing that game. I still have a watercolor print from the game somewhere in my house.
I remember, like, we interviewed Cœur de Pirate, like, for
the developer,
something Oud.
Yeah. Pierre, no, the Pierre.
Pierre Oud, Paul Oud.
God, from freaking RDS. Child of
I think he also worked on
Watch Dogs.
Yeah, I
didn't want to name... Yeah, I think he did too. I didn't want to name any of the people. Patrick Poulourd? Poulourd? P-L-O-U-R-D-E.
Lourd.
Lourd. It's hard for me to say.
Yeah, that's a very French name.
Yeah. And Brie Code helped coded this game. Brianna Code.
Yeah. Yeah, whatever the last project before she left, I think. Yeah, it's
and yeah, I don't know if they're doing anything with UbiArt Framework anymore.
I would be surprised. Yeah. I think, like, I don't have any insider info on this. I just think, like, in 2024, when you have stuff like Godot or Unreal or Unity, you tend for smaller production, you tend to go with a pre-made.
But they've used UbiArt for a lot of games, a lot of Rayman games, so you weren't far. Just Dance, Valiant Hearts, The Great War, Gravity Falls, Yo-Kai Watch Dance, I didn't know that was a thing, and yeah, lots of Just Dances and lots of Raymans. There is an actively energetic group of folks on Twitter, because I have, like, certain things that I follow, like topics. Ubisoft is one of them. There's often a lot of, like, people yelling at Ubisoft for stupid stuff, like the whole thing we talked about a few weeks ago with the crew. Mm-hmm. But also, too, there's a lot of people who really want another Rayman game.
Yeah.
Like, a lot.
I mean, like, every time I go into any kind of Ubisoft official channel, and usually it's just to, like, look at something that was posted for Honor to be like, yeah, the game I work on, go game. The comments are either people screaming that they want Rayman, screaming that they want Splinter Cell, or screaming that we need to fix Rainbow Six. And it's just like,
fix Rainbow Six? What's wrong with Rainbow Six?
It's an online competitive shooter, so apparently it'll never be to the level of what people think it should be or have a perception. Or they think it's unfair. I guess, like, there's a renown system for, like, the competitive modes. I don't play Rainbow.
I just play Tarot Hunt with friends.
So, like, at one point,
because I get pwned every time.
And it's just like, it's, I don't know. I went on TikTok, on the official Ubisoft TikTok, because they had made this really funny TikTok about the game mode I helped made, the Last Hero Standing. Yep. Every single comment underneath was fix Rainbow, fix R6, fix R6, fix R6. I was like, what's wrong with R6? Also, this is not the same game, not the same people. Like, you realize that the people that work on For Honor cannot work on Rainbow Six. Like,
they're yelling into a void.
It's like,
I mean, I want a Splinter Cell as much as the next person, but, you know, give me Sam Fisher.
He's in Rainbow Six.
Sam Fisher. Not like that.
See, you're just like the gamer's TM on Twitter.
I'm so terrible. Hear me roar. Roar.
But yeah, there's a lot of love for those franchises, but how and when they come out is never in the hands of the people that want to make those games. Like, let's put it that way.
What's crazy is that didn't the rabbits come from Rayman? And now they have a longer life? Or at least a more modern life than Rayman himself?
Yeah, but I feel like they had like a bigger success outside of games, like with their TV show in Europe, mostly in France.
There's a TV show?
Yeah, yeah, that's how they got insanely popular.
Oh, I didn't know that. Are they kind of like the Minions? I kind of look at them at the same level as the Minions.
Yeah, they're like a French Minion.
French Minion.
Basically, and yeah, they're ridiculous and they're chaotic like that.
What are they called in French?
Lapin crétin.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Oh, something I learned in Mexico too, because Mike and I were looking a lot at the signage. I think some Spanish words are even longer than French words.
Yes. Yes.
I was like, holy smokes.
And they'll change the gender.
Oh, don't do that on me.
Yeah. So it's like, oh, I know this word. It's feminine. And Spanish is like, nah, it's masculine for us. And I'm like, even between Latin languages, we can't agree on, we have to put gender on objects and concepts. But, like, in between all the romance languages, we kind of, like, went willy-nilly. And every time I learn a language, I got to learn genders of stuff. I'm like,
why is a table feminine? Why?
No reason. Because it's sound
French. La table. Because it sounds le table, la table. I don't know. There's no rhyme or reason to
this, it just sounded great. It's just, I just love that a vasectomy is feminine.
Nice.
La vasectomy.
Excellent. That's a good way to end this and flip over to news. What do you think? Yes. Time for some news. And like I said, I didn't spend a lot of time on the internet while I was on vacation in Mexico. Because, you know, though I saw something on TikTok that I wish I had purchased before I went. But maybe it was a good idea. I didn't. It's an umbrella for your phone. So it has the bottom of it is MagSafe. So it clicks to the back of your phone and then you put the umbrella and it'll pivot so you can do it so that like it stays out of the way. But then like, do I really need to spend time on my phone? Probably not.
Unless you're using it as an e-reader.
No, I'm more of an audiobook girl than an e-reader girl. I didn't even bring a paper book with me this time. And usually I do. Because even in the sand, you want to, but we don't go to the beach. We just stay by the pool. Anyways, news time.
Yeah.
Kat, this story that you shared with me today is quite interesting because we all have known that Embracer Group hasn't been doing too hot lately. Yeah. But the idea that it is now splitting into three, like cells, is quite interesting.
So Embracer Group is now three companies in a trench coat. And it's just like they're splitting into three standalone companies to search for quote unquote winning formulas. And like on Game Developer, the quote that they use for their like subtitle or subheadline is rather than imposing conformity on thriving businesses, debatable, we should foster an environment that amplify existing success. So translation for the corporate jargon is like, we fucked up and we're trying to hide our debt. Basically. So
yeah, it's the concept though of like, sometimes when you unify something like that, it's easier because then it's not so complicated. You can kind of beat everything to everybody, but now they're trying to make themselves niches. But I mean, this happens all the time. Like I was even having conversations with somebody about like how, you know, like when I worked at Aldo Group owns a bunch of stores that hit different price points. Maybe that's what they're trying to do but are they like totally divesting each of them? Like, is it all going to be separate, three separate things completely?
Yeah, they're not divesting from what I can understand. Like, it looks like they're just like putting stuff together and they're all publicly traded companies. So I guess it's to get their stock back up. And also, it's going to be a way to like pinpoint what's really not performing as well. Considering that they cancel a Deus Ex games at Eidos, I am dubious as to if they really have any way to that they really know what they're doing. But hey, you know, it is what it
Can
is.
Can we talk about how terrible these names are?
Yes. So you got three new businesses. So you got Asmodee, which was going to be the TTRPG people. You got Coffee Stain and Friends, which is basically going to be the smaller games.
Coffee Stain and Friends.
Yeah. So Coffee Stain is the studio that did Goat Simulator. So it'll give you an idea of the breadth.
The mentality. Okay. Yeah. But okay, so they actually existed prior.
Yes. And then okay. Middle Earth Enterprises and Friends will become Embracer's AAA powerhouse. We'll seek leverage in key IPs. So basically you got tabletop, smallish, indie-ish games, and then the big boys. And reminder that when we say AA or AAA, it doesn't mean quality of game. It just means budget spent on game.
Yeah.
So like a blockbuster movie is a AAA budget. So, and it's transforming into three standalone publicly listed companies. Yeah, this article confirms it.
So does Embracer mean anything anymore? Like, is it still a company? It's the Embracer Group with these three groups under it? Like,
I am trying to scroll, but my screen froze. There it comes back. Hey. So, wait, I gotta go through. Where is it? Okay, so Embracer is changing, but the CEO isn't going anywhere. Lars Wingfors. Anyway, Mr. CEO indicates that he's sticking with Embracer for the long haul.
It's interesting how they talk about what game studios are.
Yeah.
Crystal Dynamics, Dam Buster Studios, Eidos Montreal, Flying Wild Hog Studios, Tripwire, Vertigo Games, Warhouse Studios, 4A Games, and others will be hosted for Middle Earth Enterprises and Friends. So that kind of gives you an idea of the caliber of games that they're talking about when they're talking about those big ones. So they'll be joined by franchises like Dead Island, Killing Floor, Kingdom Come Deliverance, Lord of the Rings, Metro, Tomb Raider, and others.
Yeah.
Play on, Free Mode, Dark Horse, and other businesses will be bundled into this entity. So, okay.
So, I guess Embracer is going to be more like a VC.
Yeah.
Like, so... Because, I mean, if they're publicly traded companies, and this is where, like, business-inclined people need to, like, correct us, either in the Discord or on Twitter or whatever... If they're publicly traded companies, so that means that Embracer can stay majority shareholders and act as a VC, but somehow, like, I don't know if, like, on paper, that's what, but practically, does that mean that Embracer is still going to be telling these sub-companies what to do, or are they just setting them free and seeing what makes money and possibly divesting if it doesn't? If it doesn't work out, they can sell all their shares and nope out. Huh. Is this a way for Embracer to nope out of buying game studios like a drunken sailor? Is my question to the world who understands finances and corporate a bit better.
Oh, wow. No, Embracer is already priming its leadership team for a split and explained that Coffee Stain CEO Anton Westberg will oversee the process of leading up the separation of Coffee Stain and Friends. Embracer Group current interim chief strategy officer Phil Rogers will oversee the separation of Middle Earth Enterprises and Friends. Longstanding Asmodee operational executive leader Thomas Kilauger will be the coming months become the CEO of business, replacing current CEO Stefan Carvalho. Wow, this is interesting. I mean, but there's tons of companies that are like that. It's so weird that this one company went and gobbled up all these companies and now is like restructuring its business to fit all these companies.
Yeah.
And I guess it's to be able to split up the money accordingly.
But,
and so that resources get used accordingly.
Yeah.
Based on needs of projects. Because obviously a full-fledged Tomb Raider game has a very different requirement than a, you know, smaller indie-er style project.
But it's like, you know, as somebody who works like in a giant company, like, right? You know, like Ubisoft, EA. Yep. The way they work is when they acquire and they do like these studios and subsidies. Like they basically, they kind of like regroup studios according to like expertise, but also like geographically. Mm. But they're like, like, I don't know, like the they're still like fully an EA studio, Ubisoft studio. After that, it's just like, oh, if you're working in Sweden, it's different than working in Montreal or working in I forget where in the United States Red Storm is for Ubisoft. But it's like, you know, because you have
San Fran?
No, there's Ubisoft San Francisco. Red Storm is out in Texas, I think.
Oh.
But it's just like these, they work on different sizes of project. Like we mentioned, like Rayman is a different size of project versus Assassin's Creed. And then there's Codev and all that jazz. But it's like, usually it's just like the way they organize these entities is for like just how to processes to split the work to get the work done, everything. But everything else is for tax purposes. But they're not separate. Like, okay, they're still, like, Ubisoft owns them. And you can't buy stocks for, like, let's say, Massive. You know, the studio that's currently working on Star Wars that made The Division, that made Avatar. You can't buy stock just for Massive. You gotta buy stock for Ubisoft as a whole, right? You can't buy stock for, like, Respawn. You gotta buy stock for EA as a whole.
Yeah.
This is like, you could buy stock for the company that now regroups just, like, Crystal Dynamics and Eidos and...
So maybe Embracer Group is like a VC, but has most of the shares in each of these three groups.
Yeah, and from what I can tell is like, because like he was saying, like, you know, we'll use these CEOs like of these studios to like work to become CEOs of these groups and work for the transition, the split. Like, I don't think Embracer at the end of the day is going to have a say, like a any decisional power to what these studios do in the future. Because in the end, like, if EA's like looks at Respawn and is like, we're done with the Star Wars stuff, Respawn's like, oh, well, fuck. Because EA's like, we're not paying that, let's say EA's like, we're not paying that license anymore, so stop making Star Wars game. Respawn is like, shit, okay, let's make something else, right? Just like,
and it sounds like, too, that a lot of this isn't figured out yet. Yeah. They're just like, we're doing this, and now we can start to... Because they can't do a lot of it, because they can't bring people into the fold until the news is out there.
Yeah. So, from what I think, it's like, how we've been talking about soft layoffs recently, you know, with companies making shit decisions in the hopes that employees would leave the company themselves instead of making mass layoffs. This feels like soft divesting.
Yeah, it's weird. It's interesting. It could be a good thing. It could be a bad thing. It's hard to say at this point, but it's just, I think we need to wait and see kind of like how the power structure.
Yeah, because essentially
comes to play.
Embracer Group made bad financial decisions by purchasing all these studios and then relying on investments that never came because of the...
That's what I was going to ask. Were they the ones looking into like the Saudi Arabian investments?
Yeah, those fell through.
It didn't come through.
Yeah. And that's why they divested and they closed and they canceled projects and they had layoffs. I think, didn't the people that make Borderlands, didn't they become independent again? They're out of Embracer Group. Gearbox.
What is it? Gearbox Studio.
Airbox Studios. I think that was recently.
Yeah, that wasn't very long ago.
They got acquired by Take-Two Interactive.
Okay. So, were they owned by Embracer prior to that. So Embracer sold them off to Take-Two.
Yeah. Embracer sells Gear.
Which is interesting because it's right before... Aren't they making a Borderlands movie right now?
Yes. I wonder what happened to the publishing... if the publishing division went to Take-Two.
Interesting.
Gearbox Software, Gearbox Montreal, Gearbox Studio Quebec, and the franchises Borderlands, Tiny Tina's Wonderland, Homeworld, Risk of Rain, Brothers in Arms, and Duke Nukem were sold to Take-Two. Wow. Embracer will retain rights to Gearbox Publishing San Francisco, formerly Perfect World Entertainment, and which it plans to rename. The publishing rights to Remnant, Hyper Light Breaker, and other unannounced games, Cryptid Studio, Lost Boy Interactive, and Captured Dimensions. Those will stay with Embracer. Which I guess the publishing, the Gearbox publishing was basically publishing other games. It has nothing to do with
the movie.
Yeah.
Okay.
So they sold... Embracer originally purchased Gearbox for $363 million. And they sold it to Take-Two Interactive for $460 million.
Okay, that makes some change.
Yeah. So but I think like with the market, they didn't make a lot of money on this sale.
Oh,
I don't think they recuperated a lot of their costs, to be honest.
Yeah. Speaking of video game adaptations into other media, while I was away, I saw everybody going to the Fallout premiere and then saw that Fallout had premiered on Prime. Mm-hmm. You started watching it. Yeah. What'd you think?
We finished the first episode and started the second one. And as mm-hmm. somebody who's played like maybe 3 hours of Fallout 4 and that's fucking it, I am hooked. I am into it. My spouse, Pascal, has played a lot of Fallout, big Fallout fan. So, you know, if I have questions, I'm just like, what the fuck? But I think, like, as somebody who's never played any games, you can go into the show and just enjoy a really good, you know, retro-futuristic sci-fi show. Because there's a lot of, like... Fallout is very rich in lore, and the world building and the setting is great. I think like where The Last of Us not falls short, but I think they're the downside to The Last of Us, it's like it's a set story. So yeah. You gotta kind of like follow the game. As in Fallout is a setting. So from what I read, the show is a standalone story but is within the canon of the game.
Yeah, because it's almost like what happens with like you playing, well, my read on Fallout 4, I didn't play Fallout 4, I played some 76.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like your experience living in the fallout of the nuclear war, right?
Yeah. So it's those types of game, you know, and the Elder Scrolls are the same.
Yeah.
They're like a lot of RPG you've played. You can affect the story. You can make decisions. NPCs can react. Like, you know, like the meme, everyone disliked that. That's actually a screenshot from Fallout 4. So you can make decisions that every, like, one of your companion NPCs is like, the fuck, bro? Like, dude, why? So... There's no set, like every game has multiple endings. So even if like people argue the show made this and blah, 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 and it's like that in the game, but it's like at the same time, the games have multiple endings, right? Mm-hmm. And from what I understood, they did make some changes or some concessions just to make the thing clearer, or better on TV, or, you know, a bit more palatable.
That's going to happen.
Yeah. But so far, it looks pretty, like, it looks to be sticking to the game world and the game universe. So, but it is, like, if you want to, the only way to know the story that's in the Fallout show is you need to watch the Fallout show.
Yeah.
Okay. And they did.
I, Yeah, I wanted to jump on it, but Mike and I haven't had an opportunity to yet. But now that we're back, we kind of
It's also long episodes. They're like, the first one is like an hour and 15 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah, they're like, and because it's like made for, it's a Prime original, so it's made for Prime. Yeah. They don't care about having a set runtime per episode.
Oh, I like that, yeah. Though.
Yeah, Netflix does that too. Like any kind of show that was made for like direct to streaming platform, they can go with vibes. It's like a it's like an episode of the GOG cast. You don't know how long it's going to run. It ends when it's done.
It's like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get.
Exactly. And they did confirm a second season. So
yeah, I'm not surprised.
Yeah. And apparently the second season, they tease that maybe the Death Claw would be in the second season. So that's like one of the known enemies.
Okay.
From Fallout. It's like they're known to be like, you see a Death Claw, it's like seeing a dragon in Skyrim. If you kind of see it and then walk away. They're like some of the harder, bigger enemies in the game. From what I understood. At one point, though, after endgame, like, I would see a dragon in Skyrim, and the dragon would walk away from me. Pretty sure
I'm not going to mess with that chick.
I think you can reach that kind of thing in Fallout. They got the iconic armor, the exoskeleton, that one of the character from the Brotherhood of Steel. They have a ghoul.
Is dog meat there?
They have a dog, yes. It's not dog meat, but it is.
Okay.
They have a, there is a German Shepherd. Thank you. So yeah, basically the story, if you're familiar with the Fallout universe, the main characters are a dog, a chick who's a vault dweller, who steps out fresh out of the vault into the world. There's a ghoul, which are, the ghouls are humans that are basically mutated because of the radiation. And there's a member of the Brotherhood of Steel, which is like a cult-like organization that tries to preserve old technology. So that's like your cast of characters.
It's interesting because that is kind of similar to Horizon and preserving old technology.
Yes, yes. Except because of in Horizon, that knowledge is lost. In Fallout, it's not completely lost.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you have the vaults where people, it, you know, there's 200 years between the nuclear Horizon. War and this show. So okay. This show,
Horizon is how far, though?
Into the future? Probably something similar. But so there's like, there's not as much loss of knowledge because in Horizon, they don't remember pre-war. As in Fallout, because some people have memories pre-war. Because you have people that were like in Fallout 4, you had people in stasis. So they wake up 200 years later. So they remember all this shit, right? In Horizon, it's just like,
no.
Generations later. Like with the terraforming system, humans came back and rebuilt civilization from scratch. Basically, in Horizon, mild spoiler, I'm sorry. The only person that's like rebuilding knowledge and reconnecting the dots with the past prior to the cataclysmic event is Aloy.
Yeah.
In Fallout, you have way more people, way more knowledge that was preserved. And also, Fallout is a world where the transistor didn't really take off. So it was mostly like, think like the United States of the 50s and 60s.
Yeah. If
we basically branch out, I think like the universe says it branched out as is 1914 something. So, you know, there's no computers. The reason the war happened is like they were so dependent on oil and never developed any other like energy sources that the war happened because like they were fighting over the last reserve of oil out in the ocean. So it's basically got that 50s, 60s aesthetic, but the same Cold War paranoia of the United States. Also, it's like very much a comment on, you know, the politics of that time. So it's very like, it's very post-apocalyptic, like for Horizon, but like in Horizon, society progressed further than, let's say, in Fallout, or it progressed differently. Like Horizon really feels like us continuing forward. Fallout is like a branch of, like, if we didn't, like, everything uses tubes still, and like nuclear was still a big thing and a big source of energy and a big source of innovation well into the 20, the war happened in 20, oh fuck, 2070 something, I think, in Fallout. Don't quote me on this. I read a Wikipedia article before starting the show, so I have, like, just to get some context, but it's just because I didn't really know. But honestly, like, I didn't need, after watching the first episode, I was like, I didn't need to read the Wikipedia article. If you're like a huge nerd and you want like more context, but like if you just want to watch the show and enjoy whatever the show gives you, you can.
Cool.
Yeah. But it's definitely, that's why, like, when you look at, you know, the Pip-Boy.
Yeah.
You know, that aesthetic.
It looks like it's from back in the
50s. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, yes, Fall Out Boy, the band, they used that name because they were a fan of the Fallout games. It references.
I had no idea.
Fall Out Boy references the Pip-Boy.
Huh? The more you know.
Pretty sure, like, I didn't Google that recently, but I'm pretty sure this is some lost knowledge. Is Fallout Boy band meaning? Band name meaning. Name after Radioactive Man's sidekick in The Simpsons. Never mind. It was the Simpsons.
Oh, it was The Simpsons. But still, I mean, still.
I was sure it was because of Fallout. Yeah. Because of the Pip-Boy. Never mind. That was some pre-internet shit that somebody told me that I couldn't look up.
Remember that? When we used to be told stuff and we couldn't make it true, like blowing in our cartridges, and that Mew was real, and yeah. What is this funny article that you have here?
Oh, it's from The Hard Drive, which is like essentially the Onion or the Beaverton for games. It's basically Amazon's Fallout show criticized for lack of rummaging. if you've played any kind of these games, you know that you kind of like just go through everything and empty every cache and look for every collectible and every bit of resource. Basically, though this series has been praised by some for its storytelling and references to the rest of the franchise, some Fallout fans are criticizing the new Amazon Prime show because characters aren't stopping to loot every container they see. And
that would be a really long show. Like, I could see them like making a few nods to it in the show, but that would be really annoying to watch.
Yeah, it's just like this fake quote that they wrote in the article. Who the hell did they put in charge of this show? Posits Vault 77 King, a self-proclaimed fan commenting under a YouTube trailer for the show. This is almost everything I want in a Fallout show, from the setting to the plot that plays out like real Fallout quests. This one nitpick, however, ruins the entire goddamn thing for me. If Lucy isn't scouring every container and refrigerator for red X and caps, what the hell are we even doing here? <It's> like,
that's funny.
You feel like, it feels like this. I mean, gamers say some crazy shit online.
Yeah. I know, but it's like, but that's also the thing. Is like, that's what, when you think about, I know obviously it's a joke article, but when you think about the things in a game that make a game that you can't do in a TV show, that's it, because it's your choice to go and rummage and do this. You have to do it because you need to build your stuff and whatever, but like, that's the game, right? And this isn't a game, it's a TV show.
But you know that, like, gamers will complain because they made this decision for a TV show, and you know that The Hard Drive, like, they know people will complain about that, so they were like, what's the stupidest thing you could complain about? Like, and it's just like, like, there's another article on there where they say Obsidian announces a much better Fallout show. So this is a direct joke towards Fallout New Vegas.
Oh, right, because they did New Vegas. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think there was another one where they announced that Fallout was coming to every other streaming service, which is on par with what we were saying, how Bethesda puts their game onto every fucking thing they can, like Skyrim. They can't let the game die, please.
I mean, the top article right now, when you click on the hard drive, and it's obviously written today, gotta keep my fingers clean, says gamer eating face first out of Dorito trough.
Oh yeah. No, every... I mean, you open the hard drive and then you kind of like end up being stuck in a rabbit hole. Like, there's one from April 19th. New folder to obviously found just sitting there in the documents folder. Like, I'm just like, oh my god, please stop.
There are no skins left. There's no skins on Earth left to add, and now it says weeping, bleeding Epic Games employee. We need to just do this as like a thing, is like, it real article or the hard drive. Dr. Mario hit with malpractice lawsuit over prescribing half yellow, half red pills.
Ugh. It's just so many of these are just reading the titles. Anyway.
Last one before I close the show. Thank Christ, this dipshit streamer has political views so that I don't have to. And with that, we're going to close out the show this week. Thank you, Hard Drive. I appreciate you for giving me the lols. As always, you can check out the show notes on girlsigames.ca for links to all the stories mentioned this episode. You can rate and review this podcast, please, not after I just read the title of that article. You can rate and review this podcast where you're listening to it. If you could do so, that'd be much appreciated. Helps us up with discovery, pushes us up in the rankings, and if you leave comments, it helps us build our shows. Please take no offense for what I just read. I thought it was funny. Thank you, Catherine, for coming to hang out with me this week. And yeah, maybe next week all three of us be here. Maybe one day it'll be all four of us again. We still have fun, no matter what happens.
Exactly.
Kat, where can people find you online?
Yeah, I am CSDSBANSSDBAN on X, Instagram, Threads, Blue Sky, posted a photo of me connecting my laptop to my shitty TV so I could play my PC game like a console pleb. But I mostly shitpost in the Girls on Games Discord, let's be real.
Lovely. And I'm Leah Jew, our most social media platforms. But of course, you want to know everything there is to know about Girls on Games. You can track us down at The Girls on Games on X and Facebook. Just Girls on Games, no thought in there, on Instagram and Threads. Discord.me/Girls on Games to continue this conversation and more. But of course, if you ever want to know anything at all, you can track it down at our home base. That is our website, girlsongames.ca. Thanks, Kat. Thanks, Simon, for editing this. Much appreciated to you, listener, for hanging around with us. And we'll see you next week. Bye.
Bye.